But if they don't turn the ball over, you still got a guy in 17 that can make plays that Drake May is still dreaming of making. Can you win that game? Absolutely, right? But your margin of error is a lot less than it used to be.
It's time now for Nuff Said with Bob Kaczynski, brought to you by Chef's Famous Italian Restaurant, home of the famous Spaghetti Parm, and WEC Radio, the Big WEC, home of the oldies. Bob's guest today is the voice of the UB Bulls football team, Paul Peck.
Welcome back. It's another edition of Nuff Said with yours truly, and it's the holiday season, and of course we're in the chef's beautiful French Connection room, and chef's has been packed with holiday travelers and people getting together for lunch. And a shout out to the Big WEC, which is one of our sponsors as well. And our guest today is old enough, he listens to the Big WEC, Paul Peck.
I am that demographic now, aren't I?
And Paul, you've been in Buffalo since what, 88?
1988, yeah, it was a year out of college when I got the job here, so.
WIVB, and then you went into finance, and but you've been the voice of the UB football Bulls for 26 years.
Yeah, so, and it's, I did my first UB football game in 1991, and did the football games through 2000, then got involved in the Bills broadcast, and they were on a competing station, so stepped away from UB, and then UB brought me back in 2008 when they changed stations again, I've been doing it ever since, and it's over 300 football games in my career, and it's been an amazing relationship, and I've had a chance to kind of see that. I mean, think about it. I did a game in 1991 when they were still Division III at Ithaca, and where they are now, which is full-fledged Division I, unfortunately not this year, but bowl games and MAC championships and top 25 basketball rankings and Sweet 16s and WNIT titles. So it's been really cool to have seen the program evolve.
So your closet is full of UB attire.
Yeah, got a lot of stuff, yeah.
And you also do basketball. Explain what you do with basketball.
Yeah, so I do the football games on the radio, both home and road, so travel to all the games. But then when we get into basketball season, they have Josh Wetzel and Vinny Cristiano that do the radio. So I wind up doing all the TV broadcasts because all of the home games for both men's and women's are on ESPN Plus, as they are throughout the entire conference. Right. So I'll shift gears over to do television for men's and women's games. Don't have to travel, which is fine, because although it's a lot better now with charter flights than it used to be, there was ask any of those guys how many times they got stuck in the snow in Erie, Pennsylvania, driving back from a game in Michigan. I can skip that at this point in my life.
We'll talk about UB in a bit, but of course we want to talk about the Buffalo Bills, mm-hmm. who are obviously the Jekyll and Hyde. This is the Jekyll and Hyde season. You don't know what team's going to show up, not just for each game, but for each quarter.
Right.
So the Bills, so the Bengals, and I was not confident about this game going in because we've seen Burrows against
sure.
the Bills, and he just seems to be the perfect anti-McDermott defense guy. I mean, he'll take everything you give him underneath, and then he'll still hit you over the top. His accuracy is tremendous. He doesn't run around a lot, but he doesn't have to
right.
because their system really fits him perfect. And it was playing out to that until Benford makes
yeah.
that incredible. You almost never, you've seen a lot of football in your day, you almost never see that guy not just knock the ball down, but catch the ball
yeah.
and run the other
and
one.
And you almost never see Joe Burrow make
right.
essentially an unforced error like that, right? Not Christian Benford made an amazing play, but Joe Burrow not getting enough air on it
right.
was on Joe Burrow, and he doesn't usually make those plays. You know, here's my thought on the Bills, Bob. And I think this goes to why people are so worked up about it. The windows don't last forever in the NFL. They just don't, right? Ask the Ravens and the Chiefs fans about that right now. And what's happened to the Bills is while you still have Allen, which keeps your window open and always gives you a chance to win every game, they've had to, you know, they've had to replace the safeties. They've had to replace guys. Milano is injured and gotten older, and Ed Oliver is out, and the injuries have piled up. And what happens is that takes the Bills from what they've been for most of the last five or six years, which is one of the five or six best teams in the league, that no matter how badly they played, no matter how many injuries they had, no matter how good the scheme was from the other team, the Bills would usually win those games minus a couple every year because they just had more talent than everybody else did. Well, they don't anymore, right? They still have a lot of talent. They don't have as much, which now sort of brings you back to the pack of everybody in the NFL, right? So if you don't have the right scheme and you don't have the right matchup and you don't have the right guys that are healthy and or injured and your guys don't have the right attitude, you're going to lose to the Dolphins. You're going to lose to the Falcons. You're going to lose to some of these games, right? And so the Bills are always living on the edge now, right? They didn't used to always live on the edge. Now they're like 28 other NFL teams which live on the edge every single week. And it comes down to, can Allen make three or four plays that are the difference because he's that good? And do you have some other players, and in this case it was Benford, who's emerging as one of the best corners in the league, who made a couple of plays that were the difference in the game? And I know it drives fans crazy, and every game is hanging on the edge of your seat, but that's who they are now, right? It's they've missed on some draft picks. The salary cap has caught up to them a little bit, so they just don't have, they're not the dominant team they were anymore.
Yeah, well, you're right. They used to beat everybody by double right. figures. So they're a different team. And, you know, if you follow the national scribes, I don't know if they even use that term anymore. If you follow national scribes, everybody's gaga now again over Josh Allen and the sure. Buffalo Bills. I mean, it changes week to
week. It's week to week.
Well, they could now. This could be, you know, this could be their year. Come on. I mean, the Cincinnati game was turned on an incredible play. I mean, the Benford play reversed the script on that game. And, of course, we can't forget the fact that Cook fumbled on the 2-yard line. They were about to go ahead. Right. If and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. So people are not, well, we're back on the Bills bandwagon. They've got a game Sunday in New England against a Patriots team that has been turned around so quickly, mm-hmm. coming off a bye.
Good coaching matters, doesn't it?
And he's undefeated after byes. Now, that stuff I kind of threw out the window because it changes every year. And remember, you know, McDermott's got a great record after a bye. They asked him about it. He said, if I knew what it was, I'd do it every week. So the schedule has a lot to do with that. But the Patriots came in here and beat the Bills on their home turf. Why should this game be any different, or will it be the same?
Well, because the original point you started out with, and this is where I think the fans are struggling. How much NFL do we all watch? They all come down to the last 2 minutes, right? 80% of NFL games are one-score games, and I would say to you that 60% of those aren't decided until the last 2 minutes. So for the fan base that was used to three touchdown wins, you got to get out of that. It's not, they're not good enough anymore, and the league is now everybody is essentially one or two plays away from a win or a loss, right? So that's where they looked bad against the Bengals and made three plays and won the game, right? So can they do that against New England? Absolutely they can, right? Is New England that much better than the Bills or anybody else in the league? I don't think so. They're good. They're solid. They're well coached. They have a quarterback playing real well, but they don't have great receivers. They don't have great. Their defense is good. It's not dominating.
But they don't beat themselves.
Well, they don't beat themselves, right? So that's fine. So now the Bills know, don't go turn the ball over three times, right. You're going to lose, right? But if they don't turn the ball over, you still got a guy in 17 that can make plays that Drake May is still dreaming of making. Can you win that game? Absolutely, right? But your margin of error is a lot less than it used to be, right? If, you know, again, turn the ball over, you're not going to win almost any NFL game.
That is a huge difference from last year. Last year, they were so good at getting takeaways and not turning the ball over,
right.
Starting with Allen. This year, that's changed quite a bit.
Yeah, and I'll give you another point. Like, I know, you know, the Houston game was a disaster, right? We all want to think it was a disaster. It was still a seven-point game.
Right.
They gave up eight sacks. They played like garbage. They had the ball inside the 20-yard line with a chance to win it at the end. So that's where, to me, while the Bills have come back to the pack, they're still a little bit above the pack, right? You know, you're still good enough to play your worst game of the year, and it's a one-score game that if you make one play, you're still going to win. You're going to walk out of there going like this, I can't believe we gave up 8 sacks and still won the game, right? To me, and I think that's as you head into the playoffs, to your point about the national people, and I agree with them. You still got Josh Allen, and if the NFL is supposed to count for having the best guy at the most important position, I don't care if the Bills are a wild card or not, they're still going to be a team that most people are going to go, I really don't want to play those guys.
Yeah, you don't want to play them right off the bat. You don't want them coming into your stadium. To a certain extent, and it drives me crazy, and I know it drives fans crazy, but Sean McDermott's style of coaching, which is basically play the odds, his defense, you know, it was maddening in that first half against the Bengals. They were giving up so much, such a cushion, because they just didn't want, I mean, the Bengals have two of the best receivers in the league, and they just didn't want to get beat long. But McDermott, I think there's a reason why they're still in it at the very end of the game, because McDermott plays the odds. He doesn't give up, rarely gives up the big play. So the other team's not running away from you. And NFL, college football is not much different. When you got the lead, you get more conservative. You're not throwing the ball over the field.
Correct.
So you allow teams to close the gap if you're not scoring points. But what's really, I guess, maddening as I said earlier, is Sean McDermott's a defensive coach. Mm-hmm. The Achilles heel for the Buffalo Bills since he's been here has been the defense. Now, I guess if you didn't have Josh Allen, maybe we'd have offensive problems we want to talk about too. But it really is something when you look at, you know, there's been talk about Bean and McDermott not being on the same page any longer, and that McDermott's starting to get a little tired of some of these draft picks who haven't panned out. I don't know if that's true. I mean, I have somebody in here every week. I've heard people talk.
Sure.
People talk. But you've hired a defensive coach, and that's been, if they don't have Josh Allen, they're not even in the discussion.
Well, I'll flip it around to you. I give Sean McDermott credit for being a defensive coach who has understood that the strength of his team is not his defense, right?
Yeah.
And I always go back to something Bill Polian said, right? We all know the significance of mentioning something Bill Polian said. When he was building those Colts teams with Peyton Manning, he knew that 60% of the salary cap was going to have to be spent on offense. Peyton Manning, Edgerrin James, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, right? He knew the defense was never going to be a shutdown defense. But he also knew Peyton Manning was going to score 35 points every game. So as long as they only gave up 28, they were going to be fine. So he understood how to balance the resources, right? And he understood that it's okay if we give up points because we got a guy who's going to get us the one more touchdown that's the difference in the win. And I think to some degree the Bills are there a little bit too, right? The fact that you're paying Josh Allen $50 million a year for that 18% chunk of the salary cap has a lot to do with that as well. They've also had their worst set of injuries on defense, right? You're taking Ed Oliver out, taking Bernard out. You're playing, God love Tre'Davious White. He's been a warrior, but in a perfect world, he and Poyer are not playing as much as they're playing right now. So let's give McDermott some credit for making that defense be just good enough. And if teams can go up and down the field on you, but you force 3 turnovers in the game, who cares, right? What are we worried about the yardage for? Like, you win NFL games by forcing turnovers and making red zone stops and forcing field goals and not touchdowns. So let's get away from being upset that they're not the 85 Bears, because that's not who they are, and they're never going to be that. But you're averaging over 30 points a game on offense. So guess what? Give up 28, and you're going to walk out happy.
Well, the difference for this team this year is they weren't getting the turnovers. Last year they were incredible with their ability to pick up.
Which are always cyclical, right? It's, there's, again, one of those coaching things like that. There's nobody ever has an answer to why you're plus 12 one year and minus 4 the next.
You know, the national guys talk about the windows closing on the Buffalo Bills. And I understand their thinking, but I look back. There are some cases in history. John Elway is a prime example. As long as you have the quarterback, you can always retool and come back. Because the hardest guy to get on a team is the franchise quarterback.
Sure.
So I don't think the window has closed on the Buffalo Bills. As long as number 17 is there, I think they can patch up some of the weak areas. They have had some draft misses, some draft choice
misses.
That's part
of it, yeah.
Nobody's 100%, but The Bills do much better in the later rounds.
I was going to say, so somebody said to me all worked up about their draft history. I'm like, oh, look at their picks from rounds 3 to 6, 3 to 7. Christian Benford was a sixth round pick, right? Let's have they not been great in the first round? Yes, as first round is a 50% across the league, proposition anyway, right? They haven't been great in the first and second rounds, and that's hurt them. That's why Tre'Davious White has to play, because Kyer Elam never emerged, right? And again, let's also say they've been picking 25th or lower, and while it's a first-round pick, it's really a second-round pick, right? They're not picking in the top 10s, right. So I think that's part of understanding that. But when I say the windows are closing, that's what it means. It means you still got the quarterback, but the things you don't have Hayden Poyer anymore. You don't have Milano in his prime, right? Those are the kind of things that, unless you plug someone else in and there's no drop off, at some point it's going to be harder to maintain that success.
So the Buffalo Bills go into New England. Even if they win the game, the odds are still against them.
They need another New England loss, yes.
And they need New England to lose a division game, an AFC East division game,
right,
to win the tiebreaker. Now, a couple years ago when the Bills won their last six games and Miami was, I think, three games ahead at one point, mm-hmm. It all did come back to them, and then they played them in that last game of the year, which was a classic win. But you said it earlier, and you're probably right. They're going to be a wild card team.
Most likely.
Probably.
It seems, yes.
The San Diego win, or the L.A. Chargers win last night didn't help them. Right. I was watching that game. I was like, I don't know who to root for here.
Yeah, I know. Me too, because, again, the Eagles are falling apart and whatever. Here's the one thing that bothers me, Bob, and a little bit of this is based on, the Eagles. Sometimes I just don't understand. Every year, half the teams that made the playoffs the year before don't make the playoffs. And almost every year, two or three teams that were in last place wind up being in first place. Yet, we pick the same teams to win every year. And then we're like, I can't believe the Eagles aren't as good. Well, do you not watch the league? Nobody is good for 5 straight years anymore, right? It's exactly what we're talking about, right, with the Chiefs and the Ravens. So part of it is the obsession over the marquee teams that everybody talks about. You're like, part of me sometimes says, come on now. Everybody doesn't always win every year. Let's see some new teams do it. The Chargers are interesting to me because every time I watch them, I'm completely unimpressed by them. Yet they still figure out ways to win. Right. Herbert's one of those guys, not quite to Josh's level, but there's a lot of Josh in Herbert that he'll will his team to win sometimes. And Harbaugh's a great coach. As kooky as he is a great coach that figures out how to get things done. So that's a team that scares me a little bit. But honestly, all those other teams in the AFC, most of them haven't been through the playoff wars, and I think that's going to be a big advantage for the Bills, even if they are a wild card.
Okay, we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about the UB Bulls. I met Pete Lembo at a DiPaolo dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Great guy.
Awesome.
Great guy. Definitely a Buffalo guy.
Yeah.
He's a
Staten Island guy. So I don't think, if you want to talk about one end of New York to the other, there's probably as close a correlation between being a Staten Island guy and being a Buffalo guy, right? Because if you grow up in Staten Island, everybody is like, we're the Manhattan people, get away from us, right? We feel like that a little bit here.
Yeah, absolutely. So how does it navigate the NIL money? How does that work?
Well, let's start off by saying it's a challenge, as it is for every team that's sort of towards the bottom of the FBS Division I football ranks, right? UB has gotten a lot better. They've got a lot of people working hard at it. They've got a lot of people that are invested in the program that have given money to be able to have a budget of NIL money, to be able to go to a star player, for instance, Red Murdoch, the linebacker this year, to be able to go to him and say, hey, we know you love it here. We know you want to stay. You really aren't looking to leave, but we know you're going to get calls from Big Ten schools that want to offer you $500,000 to leave. we've got some money to give to you to show you our appreciation, right? And I think Pete Lemble and the staff have been focused more on being able to reward the players that they have with whatever amounts of money that they have, and then have some to be able to attract some players in. But you're not going to outspend a bigger school that wants one of your players if that's what your player is focused on. And I think some, to the credit, what Pete Lemble has built with his staff and with the attitude around the team is the guys really like it here. They know they're at a very good school. They're treated well. They're respected. And it's like everything else in life. Some people will do everything for the money. Other people will say, you know what? I'm in a good situation. I like where I am. I'm valued. I'm treated well. It's not always about the money. So, but it's a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for the Bulls moving forward in every sport. I can point to you in basketball after two very difficult seasons under George Halkovich III, where the Bulls weren't quite where they needed to be NIL money-wise. That changed, and you were able to bring some veteran players in by giving them some money, and the Bulls are off to an 8-0 start now, 8-1 after the loss to Bonaventure. So it's a challenge, right? It's a challenge. I think fans have to understand that the reality is money buys wins, even at their level. You never spent what Alabama spent. So it's right. Not like that's the issue. You want to be spending what Toledo is spending so you're comparable in your league to be able to get the same kind of players. And then you need a good coaching staff, and you need good support from the university. And the other thing is, and I hear this all the time, people lament the fact that the players don't stay. If he's good, he's going to leave. And I'm like, well, go ask anybody in college football. That's the case even at the highest levels, right? So we all have to wrap our heads around the fact that you're not going to have guys necessarily that stay for 4 years. And if you get them and you develop them and they have two really good years and they help you win, and then they choose to go somewhere else for six-figure salaries, pat them on the back and say, hey, thanks for what you did for the program. Go, good luck to you. We'll root for you. And I know that's hard for people.
You can apply that to the coaches, too.
Yeah,
the coaches are very good. They're gone. They're going to cheer. And it's happened.
And it's the reality of it, right? It's just the reality. It's the reality of where we live, right? There's a limit sometimes on what this city can provide for people, where they would go to Chicago or to New York or to Cleveland or to Pittsburgh, where there are more opportunities.
That happens at the very top of the sport as well. It's
absolutely.
Not just the mid-level.
Absolutely.
So you brought up the basketball team. And UB men's basketball is much better this year than mm-hmm. they have been. They ran into a very good St. Bonaventure team.
Yes, Bonaventure's terrific.
Now, I'm a University of Dayton graduate.
Well, then you know good basketball.
Atlantic 10. And Dayton is one of those schools. They're fortunate that in the city of Dayton, UD basketball is the only sport in town. So everything is focused on that sport. In Buffalo, for Niagara and Canisius, unfortunately, the NIL situation made a bad situation worse.
Correct. Because they're in the least funded, essentially the least funded conference.
And every year, I know at Niagara, every year it's almost a complete changeover in the roster. You can just see from the attendance of the games, it's fallen off. It's really to the point where, honestly, I mean, I grew up a Niagara fan, you know, from Niagara Falls and the Little Three and the whole thing. And you've been around town long enough to know what that was. And even when they created the Big Four, those teams were competitive.
Right.
Every once in a while, one of them would be good enough to have the thought of maybe playing in a postseason tournament. Unfortunately for those two schools, Bonaventure in the Atlantic 10 mm-hmm. is still able to maintain. And Bonaventure is
They've
much like...
They've done an amazing job at being financially competitive.
Well, they're like Dayton. They're the only team in town.
Right.
And Olean has embraced that team forever. So you really wonder, some of these teams, unfortunately, may end up sliding to a Division II, even a Division III, because financially for some of these smaller schools, especially these smaller private Catholic schools, they can't compete.
Right.
UB, though, has the facility
correct
to still hang on and be, you know, be relevant in that sport.
Right. Well, you brought up an interesting challenge, and this is something that I talk to people about a lot. And it's not just a UB thing. I'll give you a story. UB opened the season against Minnesota, and I had some conversations with their football play-by-play guy, and one of the things he brought up to me, and again, this is late August, and he, you know, Minnesota's a Big Ten program, long tradition, turned out a lot of NFL players, high-level players, and he's like, man, we can't get any coverage in this town. It's all about Vikings training camp, right? He goes, we have to fight for scraps of any newspaper or television coverage. And I said, hey, I understand what you mean, right? When you're a college program in a pro sports city, whether it's Pittsburgh, whether it's Tampa, Florida, there's a lot of them, Atlanta, Dallas, whatever, particularly in a part of the country where college athletics is not ingrained in people like it is in Texas and places like that, or even in Ohio, you're fighting over the scraps, right? The NFL is such a behemoth. It sucks the air out of the sports world in any city that it's in. And UB, Niagara, and Canisius, and Bonnet to a degree are always fighting against that, right? You had a UB Bonnet game this past Saturday. Both teams, one was 8-1, one was 8-0. You had 5,600 people come. It was an amazing game. There was almost no media coverage, almost none. Some of the UB folks that I deal with in the athletic communications office were sort of lamenting that, you know, and are like, well, if that can't get any coverage, I mean, that's arguably one of the top 10 sports moments in Buffalo this year. And on a Saturday before a Bills home game, they can't get any coverage. That's a little bit of the reality.
Paul, we could do 10 hours on what has changed in local media as far as covering television and radio or whatever, covering sports.
But it trickles to the program, right? It trickles to the program.
And go beyond
because
that.
Because it trickles to how many fans you can get, how many people come, what kind of revenues can you generate, right? Like it all leads to the point that you started this by saying, how do you compete financially?
You're 1,000% right. The issue of, I mean, I created my own business, which has been successful based on the fact that local media doesn't cover so many things. And I can fill that gap. The old guy still knows a few tricks.
That's
the old dog.
Good, I know you do.
A few tricks. And someday, because you're one of the few guys in town old enough to still remember what it was like.
Yeah.
And I won't even go into, forget Empire. I mean, the local 247.
Yeah.
Forget college sports. What about high school sports?
Right. We used to cover stuff not always because you covered it because people cared about it. You covered stuff because people need to know about this, right? You need to make people care about it, whether it's high school sports, whether it's college sports, whether it's an interesting story about an athlete. That was always part of what I always felt at Channel 4 was part of our job. Yeah, of course you cover the Bills and the Sabres and they're gonna get most of your focus, but you carved out some space for that stuff because, hey, there's this really big basketball game in town that you should know about. And if you choose to decide to want to go, great. But at the very least, if you're a sports fan in Buffalo, you should know that 8-1 St. Bonaventure and 8-0 UB are playing this Saturday.
Well, the name of the business is broadcast.
Correct.
And it's no longer
not
broadcast.
Anymore. No, not anymore.
It's narrowcast.
Correct.
Paul, don't even get me started on that. Old men love to lament. We love
to
lament.
We do.
I mean, and times always change.
Right.
And you were fortunate. I was fortunate. You kind of came in towards the end of the golden era. There's a sweet spot in Buffalo sports coverage, which was in the 80s, mm-hmm. Where all the stations started to man up and compete.
Yeah.
Because the technology was allowing them to do more with what they, whether it was videotape or whether it was microwave transmission. But that's a story for another day. Paul, I've got to say, well, two things. Number one, got to give a shout out to Scott Obenchain because Paul, I'm going to tell you this straight out. He only likes you because you're great at trivia. Because every time you come in,
we do pretty well on those Monday nights at Hamburg Brewery. Yeah.
You're the star, and they all cling to you, and that's why.
I'm not the star. I am not the star at all. Those guys, because it's not all the kind of stuff that we all know. It's always rather obscure,
it's
bizarre
obscure
stuff.
Facts.
But I hold my own. My head is 80% full of mindless sports crap and
I shared one night with them over a cocktail and some pizza, and he's got friends where they have each area of expertise. Baseball, basketball, whatever.
Oh, shout out to Ron Carr, who could tell you the starting lineup for the 1938 Pittsburgh Pirates.
That is obscure.
Yes.
But I also have to say, I met your lovely wife at a function at, of course, everywhere I meet people, it's a DePaulo function
of
some kind.
Of course.
Beautiful, nice Polish girl.
Yes, you know. She is.
You're married to Eddie Rakowski's daughter. How's Eddie as a father-in-law?
Eddie's awesome. For me to be in the sports world, to have a relationship with a guy who played for the Bills, who's been active in the Bills all his life, and to get a chance to meet the alums through Eddie and call Booker Edgerson and some of those guys friends is amazing. And just to sit and be able to talk sports with Ed and get all his old Notre Dame stories and
plus
all those
AFL.
He had an extensive
political
career. Absolutely, yeah. Right.
And I'm
certainly always very intrigued by the sports business aspect, which, again, has become such a big part. We just talked about sports business in college. We could go and talk about stadiums and NFL and all that kind of stuff. And Ed always was really interesting to talk to because he saw a lot of that when he was county executive. He was very involved in the business backs, the Bills that arguably kept this team here in the late 90s. So incredibly. And again, I didn't grow up here. So when I met my wife, I had no idea who her father was. I had no idea. We met because we both worked at Channel 4, and that's how we met.
Oh, she worked at Channel 4?
Yeah, that's how we met. And then eventually you find out that her dad is a former Bills player and a county executive and a kind of a minor celebrity in town, right, that everybody knows, and Jack Kemp and all those other...
With the last name of Rutkowski, he's not minor in Buffalo.
I know. Everybody but Bills and
All
Sabres
things aside,
are minor.
He was a nice Polish boy. Polish boy.
Yeah.
And Eddie and I were co-hosts with Jim Kelly on the Jim Kelly Show at Channel 7 for 1 year.
I think I do remember.
And
I stress
minor co-host because Jim was the guy.
Of course.
We were only there to help him ask questions.
Of course.
Paul, I want to wish you and your family a great Christmas, a great holiday.
Thank you, Bob.
And continue success with the UB program. Say hello to Coach Lembo for a great guy. I'll have to have him on the podcast.
Yeah. It's been an honor for me to have been, we're getting close to 40 years now in this town, and I've been able to be involved in the sports world in one way or the other for that entire time, from Channel 4 with Van and onto the Bills with Murph and now at UB and even doing the Beat the Champ bowling show of all things.
That's
right?
Another whole chapter of your life.
I have been incredibly fortunate to be involved in the sports world in a city that cares about its sports and respects people that talk about sports and can educate people on sports, and I've had a great life and an incredible career, and that doesn't happen without the amazing people in this town.
I'd love to see the calendar on your phone, because between all of the gigs you got going, it's
this time of year it gets a little hectic. Yeah. Thankfully, here's the inside secret on Beat the Champ. We tape once a month. We do four shows in one day.
You burst the bubble.
Well, just so people know. So it's not like every week I have to be at a bowling center.
Or that these guys show up every week to bowl. Like,
right.
They've got a whole week to worry about.
We're going to Rochester this coming Sunday, and we'll do four shows. And we're so far ahead, thanks to our great producer, Joe Ciccone, that the shows that we'll tape on Sunday, I think, don't air till like March. That's how crazy it is. People will ask me about a show that they saw, and I'm like, I can't even remember, because that's like 12 shows ago from when we recorded it.
So you're recording, getting ready for Christmas, but when people watch it, it's like Easter.
Yeah, well, we've kind of gotten to the point now where we don't reference the time frames or anything, So because it's just, it's so far out, and that's just a little inside TV secret there, right? That's how it gets done. But again, I'm about as busy as I want to be. October, November are crazy because you get overlaps with football and basketball and bowling, and every once in a while something will come up for me with the Bills. But it'll settle into about two or three things a week once we get to January.
It's great having you on. We'll have you back, Bob. Have a great Christmas.
My pleasure. You too. Thank you.
We're going to wrap it up. Again, a shout out to chefs. If you want to have a holiday meal, Can't Beat Chefs. And the Big Weck, they're going to blend some Christmas music in. A shout out to Buddy Shula and friends. We'll be back next week. Until then, have yourselves a great night. Much better tomorrow.